Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 27th of April 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. It's pretty chilly in this studio, I have to say, although with the lights it'll warm up shortly, but reports across the country, cold, frost in Devon, snow in other places across England, Wales and Scotland. And I believe that we're short of water already.
Right. Was it cold in Bridgend yesterday, Brian?
Well, I think it must have been because Theresa May, our Prime Minister, allegedly, has become an anti-tourism campaigner. And this is quite astonishing. This is what she had to say on camera. We also want to strike deals across the world for trading, for exporting British goods and services. We want to lead the world in preventing tourism. And that is what she said. Obviously, she stumbled and tried to correct herself pretty quickly. But I don't really know why she would, because, of course, Britain is doing a brilliant job in preventing tourism by simply stealing the children of people who come to visit this country.
Well, let's talk about tourism then, because Israel appears to have been on a tour of Syria earlier. They were bombing Damascus, close to the international airport. This report in Sputnik saying that they caused material damage. One of the military facilities located in the southwest of Damascus International Airport was subjected to a missile fire from hostile Israel. That was what Sana had to say. The missiles were fired from the occupied territory, which led to explosions on the ground and property damage. Perhaps we don't have to wait for the US to take action, because Israel once again just going on ahead without any kind of mandate.
Well, of course, because Israel simply doesn't respect other countries. If they feel there's the need to bomb them, they go ahead and do it. And with an enormous lobby inside Westminster and, of course, the US Senate, this is easy to do, because you know you just get away with it. It's wrong.
Absolutely wrong. And, of course, Britain, absolutely wrong as well. Boris speaking on Radio 4 this morning, mostly about Brexit, but then he was asked about Syria. He said that he would find it, he said we, of course, he means him and Theresa, we would find it very hard to say no if the United States asked for help in Syria. So if the United States go ahead, so again he's presenting this idea that it's a US initiative. It's not, it's a British initiative, and of course he would take part. But he was asked, well, of course Parliament would have to approve that. And he said, well, that idea would have to be tested. That idea would have to be tested. So what do we imagine is going to happen? Well, of course, Parliament is dissolved on the 3rd of May. And when Parliament is dissolved, every MP seat becomes vacant. In other words, 650 people become unemployed as regards their Member of Parliament status, at least. However, government and Parliament are two separate things. And so ministers of state, including Boris, stay in post until a new government is formed. And so if the Americans, as he would put it, decide to come along and ask for British help, I suspect that that's exactly what's going to happen. There is going to be some kind of false flag in Syria, and sometime after the 3rd of May, the US are going to present the idea that they're going to lead the war in Syria, and they're going to come asking for British help. And because Parliament is dissolved, Theresa May and Boris Johnson will simply use the royal prerogative to go ahead and join in.
But really no change, Mike, because this is the way government has been run for some time now. The bulk of the backbench is totally irrelevant. All the decisions are made by committee members known as the cabinet. And of course, within the cabinet, if you're not in the top tier, your opinion is not really of interest anyway. So this is a common purpose government. It's government behind closed doors. And if you're not in the, quote, leadership club, unquote, then you're irrelevant. So much of it, no change, but it's just getting more dangerous.
Now, this organisation, the OPCW, has been in the news, obviously, over the last couple of weeks following the so-called Assad chemical weapons bombing of civilians. This is how it was described. Of course, we know it was nothing of the kind. The OPCW there to make sure that chemical weapons aren't used around the world. Well, on the 29th, which is Saturday, it is their 20th anniversary. So happy birthday to them. It's a pity they're doing such a poor job at the moment. The Secretary General of the United Nations there has given them a congratulatory message. They say over the past 20 years, approximately 95% of chemical weapons stockpiles declared by processor states have been eliminated under the watchful eye of the OPCW. Well, let's just remember that they refused to get on the ground in Syria to look at the situation. And of course, every day that passes, evidence is being destroyed. So it becomes increasingly difficult to get proper evidence of what happened a couple of weeks ago in Idlib. Even if they were to go there themselves, they haven't gone there themselves. There's no indication that they will go there themselves. So they're relying on on information that's been garnered through Turkey.
And the Syrian observatory in a terraced house in Bradford or wherever it is.
Well, exactly. So this organisation requires a bit of scrutiny, a bit of held to account. I don't think they've got any reason to celebrate 20 years of existence at this point. And we should ask, does Israel have chemical weapons?
I really don't know. It's an interesting question.
The Russians then, we'll move to Afghanistan because TASS here saying that the Russian general staff are highlighting the fact that Islamic State is starting to become active in Afghanistan. They're recruiting Taliban fighters. Of course, the key point that they're concerned about is access to drugs because the opium crops continue to succeed and the number of acres given over to opium continues to grow. This is a massive cash cow for extremist organisations, as they put it. Should they fall into the hands of ISIS, that becomes yet more free money for them.
I'm a bit puzzled by all this, Mike, because I thought that the British and the Americans and a variety of other nations went into Afghanistan with massive military might in order to sort all these problems out.
No, they went in, they said, to sort out the Taliban, but that was only because the Taliban had stopped the poppy production for the year that they were in charge in Afghanistan.
Right, so we put all the troops in, a massive cost and massive deaths, of course, across the country. And then what happens to the poppy crops?
Well, it exploded in terms of
production. Yeah, so we've now got the drugs on flow again, and we've destroyed the country.
And now we're allowing ISIS in, so this is going to be great.
But it's going to be blamed on the Russians.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's good.
We've seen this type of story quite a number of times in the last few months. But Russia has banned three more NGOs, this time linked to Khodorkovsky. So this is three NGOs. The Prosecutor General's Office, according to the Financial Times here, said that the Open Russia Foundation, the Institute for Modern Russia, and the Open Russia Movement are to be designated undesirable organisations. Now, they said that the three organisations carry out special programmes and projects on the territory of the Russian Federation aimed at discrediting the results of the elections of Russia and at declaring them illegitimate. And I just wondered, had they any justification for this? So a brief look, and who do we find?
It looks like Mr. Soros to me, Mike,
yes.
I think.
Yes, so I suggest everybody goes and has a look at this page on the Khodorkovsky website, An Evening with George Soros at an Open Russia Club. George Soros, financier and philanthropist, they say, came to the Open Russia Club to talk about his long involvement with Russia, and some very interesting little quotes on that.
Yeah, so with white earmuffs. It was obviously cold there.
I don't think he speaks Russian. I think that's the problem. Right. EU defence ministers meeting happened today. As you can see, they're all very happy. So there is Federica Mogherini, who is, well, tantamount to being the European Union's foreign minister, and Jens Stoltenberg, the head of NATO. They met earlier. I leave it to people to decide whether any tongues were involved in this. Stoltenberg again, reinforcing the fact that the European Union and NATO have a special relationship. This isn't a special relationship between NATO. How many European countries are already members of NATO? quite a number.
I've lost track. I'm going to give an honest answer. It's true. I have lost track of the number of countries because it just seems that anybody who's going is sucked in if they can do it.
Okay, but the point here is that NATO includes many of the countries of the European Union, but the European Union is getting special status within NATO. So how does that work unless there is European military unification?
Everything states that that is the goal. So you are going to always be speaking in terms of your goal, right? It's very, very easy.
Absolutely. Well, Michael Fallon wasn't there because this was an informal defence ministers meeting. Who's that?
I think this is Mike Penning.
That is indeed.
MP. And of course, this man is of interest because he was the former policing minister that took all the evidence from the Metropolitan Police whistleblower on child abuse. That was John Wedger. He sat down with Mr. Wedger. He listened to all the evidence and then he did absolutely nothing. So if he's duplicitous on the subject of child abuse, I'd be very interested to know what this man is doing in this environment. I would say equally, perhaps more dangerous.
Okay, so the official words said an informal meeting of the EU defence ministers will take place in Valletta today, chaired by EU High Representative for Foreign Security Policy, Federica Mogherini, the Secretary General of NATO, and a senior UN peacekeeping official. Normally, the Under Secretary General of the Department of Peacekeeping of the United Nations are also expected to attend, and they did indeed attend. So what are they mainly talking about? The background to the meeting will be the decisions adopted at the December 2016 European Council in particular on strengthening defence capabilities, as well as how the EU member states and the Union as a whole can contribute to the enhancement of the EU's common security and defence policy, a critical component of the EU's common foreign and security policy. So the CSDP, well, I'm just going to remind everybody of this page on the UK column website, EU military unification, and also the timeline. Because when we look for the EU's common security and defence policy, we find that began, the foundations for that were laid in 1991 and followed up in 1998. In 1998, Chirac, we've said, signs Blair up for a Franco-British core of EU military union. All the key timeline points are there for anybody that wants to understand how we've got to this point of European Union military unification.
It's all moving along at pace, and as David Ellis continues to say with Strategic Defence Initiatives, it's time the retired senior British military officers woke up to the reality that they're being betrayed by the day. Treason is the word, I think, Mike.
Yes, and treason and Junkers, Jean-Claude Junckers, who, of course, has said several times, beginning in 2015, he made the point that European military unification was a condition of any renegotiation between Britain and the European Union. And that has not changed since we have declared that we're leaving, even though we're not. But anyway, we'll come on to that later. They were meeting yesterday, and I haven't seen any UK-based mainstream reports on this. I don't know why. I've seen a few foreign language reports from Europe, but I haven't seen any UK reports on this at all.
Closed-door meetings, really, the public are a bit of a nuisance and you don't want to tell them too much, especially when you're conducting treason. So it's going to be done behind the closed doors.
Now, anybody that thinks that Brexit is real, just pay attention to this comment from the Prime Minister's spokesperson, who said, following the UK's letter of notification under Article 50, Theresa May reiterated to Junckers the UK's commitment to achieving a deep and special partnership with the European Union.
Yeah.
So we're not leaving at all.
No, not leaving. We're never leaving. Right. Let's break for a couple of adverts. We're going to say thank you very much to the people who've now signed up in order to give the British Constitution Group a monthly donation. This is greatly appreciated. And I know Justin Walker would want to be saying that this is just the support that we need to start pushing forward over the period of the election. And the aim remains for as many people as possible to be challenging those MPs and the candidates in front of cameras, preferably to ask them about the subjects that they don't want to talk about, be it EU unification, the state of the economy, the fact that the bankers are still printing money from nothing, where the children are going, whatever the question is, hard-hitting questions in front of the public and in front of cameras, preferably.
And then send it to us.
And then send it to us, because at the end of the day, the more people that publish the lies and deception that comes out of the mouths of these parliamentary candidates, the better. We'll also say, if you're not booked in, you might like to think about attending AV8 with Ian Crane on the 20th of May. If you go to his website there, you can log on and get tickets. And of course, Ian has a range of speakers, but a key part of his events is also to get people mixing and socialising, which is good for morale. People talking about what's really going on instead of discussing Coronation Street or EastEnders. And so these are serious subjects, but it's good to socialise at the same time.
And a final reminder of a screening of Vaxxed tonight in West London. The venue will be confirmed later. So that's taking place 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock this evening. More details at the Bring Vax to the UK Facebook page.
And from vaccination to Big Pharma.
Well, indeed. The Independent here, this was right across the mainstream media. Drug giants will leave UK if NHS does not receive billions in extra funding. And this is according to a pharma industry body in the UK. They are complaining that basically Britain is not spending enough on healthcare, not spending enough compared to other G7 nations. They're saying that Britain is going to become a desert for healthcare innovation unless basically the government puts much more money in their hands, is pretty much what it comes down to.
So this is the old lie that insufficient money is causing the problem, whereas we have proved conclusively that the big problem in the NHS is they're being ripped apart from the inside with the help of common purpose.
Well, that is the problem with the NHS, but the pharma's problem is that not enough of NHS money is going into their
hands. Going back
to
that, I beg your pardon. Yeah. Right.
So yeah. So they're complaining that we're only spending 9.9% of GDP, that really we should be spending 20 billion more. And most of that should go to them, is pretty much what they're claiming.
It wouldn't be a bad thing if they left UK altogether, complete with their drugs, would it?
Well,
that did bring a smile to your face, so it can't be too bad.
Right, okay. MAPA, multi-agency public protection arrangements. This isn't specifically about MAPA, but it is of that sort of policy agenda. Basically, they're... Police here complaining that the National Health Service isn't doing enough to help terrorist attacks.
Yeah, I think they mean terrorism in this case, actually.
Yes, yes. And this is according to the Met's counter-tourism chief. And they're saying doctors and health workers are not doing enough to help prevent terror attacks by mentally ill people who are targeted by extremist recruiters. And they're saying that since the 2011 Prevent review, all NHS bodies must train staff to spot signs of radicalization and spot people they fear are at risk of becoming terrorists to the security services. So what was said here, the risk is not simply about the mental health condition, but it's also about somebody else revving them up and trying to exploit it. However good the mental health professional is, the mental health team on its own is probably insufficient. And so what is being called for here is yet more merging between
collaboration
and merging between in this case health professionals and the police.
We might expect medical people to be saying, I don't care what the background of this person is, I don't care what their color is, what their religion is, what their country of origin, they're sick or they've come here needing medical and health care, and that is my first duty. But no, we can't do that job in the first instance for a variety of reasons. But now we're drawing the network tighter of all these public agencies collaborating. Well, let's follow this theme on and remember that all this is happening under the smokescreen of what's happening in Syria in the Middle East. So a lot of people simply focusing on the terrible events in Syria. But behind the scenes in this country, very, very dangerous political policy coming in. So let's bring in this lady, Alison Hernandez, and she's the police and crime Police and Crime Commissioner down here in Devon and Cornwall. And there's a little bit of a furore going on at the moment because there's a police investigation into her election expenses. But here's the local newspaper, and it says, Alison Hernandez, why I am continuing as crime czar despite the police investigation. Well, that's a pretty upfront statement. So what does she have to say? She says, I imagine that many of you saw I was referred to the Crown Prosecution Service recently regarding investigation into the 2015 general election expenses in Torbay. Obviously, I believe that I am innocent of any crime, but the lengthy process must be concluded before that becomes a matter of record. So she's pretty confident. And she goes on here, whilst that continues, I thought it might be more useful to explain why I'm continuing in the role as your police and crime commissioner while this investigation takes place. So that's all good stuff, Mike, isn't it? Now, what's interesting about this lady is she's openly declared that she's a common purpose graduate. So she is a future leader, specially selected and trained. And of course, she works within a UK, indeed growing worldwide network of these special leaders who specialise in having meetings behind closed doors where they simply don't reveal to the public who was present or who said what. And this lady is a police commissioner. So let's follow on through this story and see how pernicious this network is. She says it's clear that no police and crime commissioner can be investigated by their own force, which is why West Mercia Police was chosen to investigate my case, being entirely independent of me and Devon and Cornwall Police. So those are the words out of her mouth. Well, we're absolutely delighted to see that a member of the public was tracking what was going on here, and they thought we might like a copy of their email. Subject, Alison Hernandez, why I'm continuing as crime czar. And this is the meat of the email. You are misleading the public through this media outlet. Alison Hernandez, as Police and Crime Commissioner at Westminster Police, are not independent of the investigations of allegations of elections expensive fraud at all. That is because your common purpose colleague, ex-Chief Superintendent, Devon and Cornwall Police, Chris Singer, of 29 years, previously based at the Plymouth Civic Centre and embedded in Plymouth City Council, moved to West Mercia Police in 2015. Conveniently, he's now announced his retirement. So this was a remarkable coincidence that a very senior Plymouth policeman and common purpose graduate becomes the assistant chief constable in West Mercia. So we have common membership, in inverted commas, of this very devious political charity, but they're independent. It's amazing how often we're coming up against this expression. So let's have a look at Mr. Stringer himself. Don't believe me, go and have a look at it. So this is from the West Mercia Police website. There's quite a bit of biography, but we just want to highlight some of the key bits there. He says, finishing the Olympics, because he's done quite a bit of time away from the police force, Prince's Trust for a while, and then a little bit of time with the Olympics, as you do. Chris took temporary command for Plymouth before then spending a year working full time embedded with Plymouth City Council as a seconded member of the executive team, helping to identify and reap gains from stronger collaboration across the public and voluntary sector.
So here we have a policeman embedded in the executive team of Plymouth City Council.
Yeah, separation of powers.
Or none.
None, absolutely none at all. And of course, what makes this doubly insidious is that Plymouth City Council, full of common purpose trained graduates with their secret networks, this man is part of that network. Well, let's add in this one. I worked in close partnership with Plymouth City Council during 2014 as a member of the council executive leadership team, building strong collaboration and developing new arrangements for public sector cooperation.
Were those arrangements made public? Do we understand what those arrangements are?
Not at all, Mike. As well as supporting the council through their, quote, transformation programme as an executive on the people an organisational development programme developing people capability and processes. Now, this is getting into the real common purpose language. He goes on to say, passing the Senior Police National Assessment Centre in 2014, I successfully completed the Strategic Command course in 2015, an executive development course for senior leaders in the police service. Following this, I held responsibility for business change in Devon and Cornwall Police. So the police in Devon and Cornwall are a business. They're happy to declare it now. And we have police who are a business inside and indeed part of the local authority executive structure. This has never, ever been discussed publicly. This has never been discussed as policy inside Westminster. This is common purpose, big society agenda now unfolding in front of our eyes. Unbelievably dangerous, because of course when you go to the police, are you simply talking to the police or are you actually talking to Plymouth City Council?
These are structures of governance that we have literally never seen before.
Participatory.
Yeah.
Participatory democracy. It is only the UK column at the moment that is warning and showing the public what is happening here. If you feel that cities are changing, that the local authority, the other civil servants are not doing their jobs, absolutely correct, because they're being drawn into a collaborative business system. Well, here's the gentleman concerned, a big smile, of course, because he's now retired on a greatly increased pension, having done his time as Assistant Chief Constable in West Mercia. And what has he got to say? Well, let's remember that he's common purpose. He's a graduate within the same networks as Alison Hernandez. I'll be very specific here because you've got to think this through. They don't declare who's in common purpose. They don't declare where they are. They don't declare when they met or talked. He, in fact, says that he hasn't met, as we'll show in a moment. Second most senior officer in an independent West Mercia police. Well, is it? And here we've got, of course, the fact that common purpose itself encourages closed door meetings with undeclared participants. I believe that there is a test case. I can't remember the details in the news today. I'll check on it. But there was a case in which it rested on the fact that it wasn't what was discussed behind the closed doors that was important. It was the public's perception of what may have been discussed. And this, of course, takes us to the heart of the problem. So how can we be sure this man's involved with common purpose? Well, this is part of an article that did appear in one of the local papers. I know the text is very small, but this is also was on the common purpose website, taking a lead with the leaders. And in this article is all dialogue by this gentleman himself, Chris Singer. And I'll take you into a little bit of it. He said, I knew we could improve our leadership qualities by harnessing the power of inspiration to help create a vision for the future of our organisation. Now, the organisation he's talking about is Devon and Cornwall Police. I wanted our leaders to take the same vision-changing journey that I'd been on.
So that's some kind of experiential applied psychology.
Yeah, this man has clearly been changed. He's now on a mission. He's a vision. If you read the article, he's no longer a policeman. He is on a vision to change the lives of millions of people. This is immensely dangerous stuff. And if we're fair to Mr. Singer, he probably doesn't even realise that this has actually been done to him. Well, we can go on. Singer and his police colleague Grafton decided to draw on their network of fellow common purpose graduates in the region to help create a vision that would inspire leaders within their organisation. So here is the policeman drawing in outsiders, no business getting involved in the substance of the police, but he wants those people in because he's now part of this vision to change the lives of millions of people. This is quite spooky stuff.
Police behaving like this in some tin pot dictatorship somewhere, these people, this type of behaviour would put a country to the top of the global corruption list.
Yeah, This is Britain.
But Britain's not corrupt at all, apparently.
I think we're top of the list, Mike. Well, let's have a look at the serious stuff, because, of course, there has been some comment by the chief police officer of West Mercia Police. So let's have a look at this letter. What does it say here? It says, read your email, which is the one we've just shown you. I apologise for the lack of an earlier reply. However, it was not clear from your email that you required or expected a reply.
Oh.
So the chief constable, a little bit puzzled that when you email pointing out that what appears to be going on is a conflict of interest, he's not sure whether he should reply. Says, at the time, I was approached inquiring whether West Mercia Police would be the lead force in this independent police complaints commission managed inquiry. I was aware of a perception of a possible conflict of interest and consequently examined this issue with considerable care. I was satisfied then and remain satisfied now that there is no such conflict regarding the role of Assistant Chief Constable Singer and the inquiry into election expenses returns by the current Police and Crime Commissioner in Devon and Cornwall. And my reasons are this: the inquiry is being managed by the Independent Police Complaints Commission. They will direct the detail of the investigation, working with the senior investigating officer from West Mercia Police. Assistant Chief Constable Singer is not part of the investigation, but he is responsible for ensuring that the resources required by IPCC are made available.
So he chooses who's on the team, perhaps?
Maybe he chooses on the team, but he decides what evidence they're going to get. But there's no conflict of interest. It's independent.
I'm sure there's nobody that's common purpose in the IPCC either.
Who's to know, because they're undeclared. So let's put it on. In your email, you raise a concern regarding the common purpose course and some general comments, general, regarding Plymouth City Council. Let's just highlight bits down here. Given the clear separation from the investigation and the lack of association between Ms. Hernandez and ACC Singer, I'm satisfied that there is no cause to believe that there is any conflict of interest. I hope this provides you with appropriate assurance as to the probity and integrity of this investigation. Well, all that's happened is that Singer says, well, I don't think we ever met.
He could lie.
He could lie, he could have forgotten, but we don't know whether the communication, if there is any, between the two of them is not done directly. It's done through other common purpose graduate members.
And again, the other thing we don't know is where do people's loyalties lie? Do they lie with the constabulary that they work for, or do they lie with common purpose?
We know the answer to that, Mike, because we have documentary evidence which clearly states that when you're involved with common purpose, you become the quote, eyes and ears of common purpose. It doesn't matter what your organisation is, your primary function is to be the eyes and ears of common purpose. So we just remind people of this appalling situation, because we've now got Cressida Dick, the Chief Constable of the Met Police. She is a common purpose graduate. In fact, she's immersed in it. But this was a Mail article which pointed out that 22 police forces, nearly £470,000 to common purpose. The Met spent 60, Thames Valley 28,000. The biggest spender, interestingly, Police Scotland at nearly £100,000.
Okay, well, of course, who's driving these agendas? And we find that it's quite an international agenda to merge public authorities, this participatory democracy scheme. And of course, cities are right at the heart of it. And Benjamin Barber, who was one of the key architects of the so-called city-state, city-region, has passed away following cancer. He was 77. He's described in this article as being an agile, adventurous and enthusiastic scholar who believed that big ideas were needed to address big challenges. He thought these big ideas, wrote groundbreaking books about them, put them in context, formed movements to advance them. And so, well, who are the types of people that he swung in his direction? Well, here's one of them, Ken Livingstone. He said he called for power to be devolved to our cities. if we want to save the planet, he said, and everybody needs to be joining the Global Parliament of Mayors. And sticking on this subject, this is the mayor of The Hague, who said the Global Parliament of Mayors will deploy collective urban political power, manifesting the right of cities to govern themselves, as well as the responsibility to enact viable cross-border solutions to global challenges. In this era of interdependence, where nation-states are increasingly dysfunctional and cities are everywhere rising, the moment has come for cities to take the leap from effective local governance to true global governance. And last September, then, we had the first Global Parliament of Mayors sitting. Do go and have another read at this article on the UK Column website, The Global Parliament of Mayors and the Abolition of the Electorate, if you want to understand some of the background to this, published just about a year ago. In fact, it was a year ago yesterday that was published. This is really important stuff because it's to get a grasp of what is going on around us at the moment, we've got to understand this stuff.
Mike, I'm just going to bring this in and then I'll come back to comment on this. But somebody in the chat box is pointing out to me that in a LinkedIn recommendation of Alison Hernandez by an NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming Master Coach, they say if she meets resistance or prejudice, she does not just accept it, finding methods to overcome or work around it to achieve success. So we've got NLP gurus praising this police and crime commissioner. Why are they doing that? Because clearly through a common purpose training as the minimum, this lady has been reframed to also work into, what was the comment in the previous slide, urban political power, was it?
It's at the beginning. It says
here to deploy collective urban political power.
Yes.
And that is what we have been describing in this vicious, pernicious network of this political charity, Common Purpose, now completely wrecking any separation of powers. You've simply got one big collective of power operating in any city. And of course, the moment you inject corrupt individuals into that collective, the whole collective is corrupted.
And it protects the corruption.
And it absolutely protects the corruption. So we are able now to see exactly where this policy is going. Of course, the city states is global policy, but it's been heavily promoted by the European Union, embedded through Common Purpose into our supposedly democratic UK. Well, let's look at what that enables the state to be capable of. And I might have mentioned some of this before, but we need to have a look at this again because this is very, very, very serious stuff. We've got a young 16-year-old boy detained alone in his cell, Feltham Young Offenders Institution, 23 and a half hours a day. Lawyers for his mother claim inhuman and degrading conditions breach the Human Rights Act. And the boy's also been denied the statutory minimum of 15 hours education per week. So we are putting, I'm going to say children, already 16, we are putting children in solitary confinement, even though they've got mental health issues. And this is where it gets interesting. The Home Secretary, Liz Truss, simply admits it. I'm going to show you that in a minute.
Justice
Secretary, I beg your pardon. In November 2016, Liz Truss was crowing that she was going to put an extra $500 million to crack down on the chaos, the quote, chaos in prisons, and promised to hire 2,500 extra frontline wardens. And we pointed out that these were going to be cheap staff because many of the good, well-trained public servant wardens have left in disgust. So this is what she presents to the public. But in this particular case, she's conceded that the boy's placement in solitary conditions had breached his right to a private life and was unlawful because prison rules were not followed. So here she is, quite happy that we've got law simply not followed in prisons, not with an adult who's put in solitary confinement because they're aggressive or disruptive, whatever it is. But this is a very vulnerable young adult and they don't sort it out immediately. They go to court to contest it. This is vicious stuff. So if the boy's got mental health issues, Melanie Shaw, as a child abuse whistleblower, now held in solitary confinement for over 11 months, over 11 months in solitary confinement. And of course, Lizzie Trust, not interested at all, does not give a fig for the fact that this is regarded as torture by the UN, which we don't particularly follow. But there we go. So have a look at this man. So we've got Tory MPs saying, well, this is in relation to books going into prisoners, that they're pampered. This is complete and utter nonsense. So if you haven't done anything to support Melanie, let me just cut. Sorry. OK, we'll stay on this slide. If you haven't done anything to support Melanie Shaw, then please pick up a pen or get typing out that email. Now, here's a BBC report about this one teenage offender held in inhuman conditions, court hears. And I found it ironic that the reporter, who's Home Affairs reporter for the BBC, is Danny Shaw. So presumably distantly related to Melanie Shaw. But of course, the BBC simply does not want to report on this case at all. Now, this is what we are talking about. We need our viewers and listeners to not just take in the information, but you need to do something. And unless we all take action when we are in those prison cells, will anybody actually be speaking out for us or indeed for you? Well, we'll put the icing on the cake because, of course, while this is going on, BBC managers on the big salaries, 150,000 plus, they're going to get rises in their pay. They work so hard. And of course, what do they do with this article? Well, they deflect the subject, which is obscene rises for the BBC. You need to see the article to see how cleverly it's put together. So the headline is BBC managers on 150,000 salaries. But within a few paragraphs, the real problem is that the public are not paying their TV licences. And that's causing the BBC a shortfall. So the real problem is that they haven't really got enough money to pay those salaries. And I've got to say that we've regularly reported that the BBC's budget is 3.65 billion. I can now tell you that unfortunately that's not true. The exact figure is 3.74 billion. But they need that £150,000 a year because otherwise it's difficult to survive on it.
It's tricky, isn't it? Well, let's just end on this one then. Now, we've been highlighting for quite a long time that Britain has an issue with pensions. Because, of course, it is a Ponzi scheme in this country. We're talking about public pensions here. The OECD then has said that the UK should axe, as some mainstream media are presenting it, should axe state pensions for what they're describing as rich people. So they're saying get rid of state pensions for the wealthiest 5 to 10%. Maybe that includes those BBC managers. But what we're talking about here is getting rid of a universal benefit. So I think people need to consider what the implications of that are, because it means that obviously if you're removing a benefit from one section, then other sections need to justify receiving it. So it means form filling and all this kind of stuff. So there are potentially implications to that. But the key point here is that the OECD giving advice to the UK government because they recognise that basically with the massive black hole that we have in our public pension system at the moment, something around £5 trillion, that it's unsustainable. We will not be able to pay that in the long term. And they're looking for any and every possible excuse for reducing that obligation.
Indeed. And I think it was the father of Boris Johnson was stating on a BBC radio programme a little while ago that he thought that a good solution would be to reduce the UK population to, I think it was 30 million.
No, he said, wouldn't it be wonderful? Right. Wouldn't Britain be wonderful if we didn't have 60 million people, but we had 20 million people?
Oh, 20.
Instead of 20.
20 million. So if you want to know what sort of thought patterns might be in Boris Johnson's head, you've got a clue there. But the subject of the fact that we are seeing our complete common law structure, our constitution thrown away in this country, and this new city-state agenda, which is going to be run as a private fiefdom, whether that's Plymouth or whether that's Cornwall Council or other councils across the country. This is the dangerous change that's being pushed through by the day under the smokescreen of these violent events overseas. So if you understand what we're putting through in UK Column News, please help us spread the word by sending the UK Column links to other people, tweeting out, but getting people to start watching and understanding what's really happening. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow with David Scott and Northern Exposure. Thank you. Bye-bye.